Hi there, and welcome to A Different Way of Seeing. Have you ever wondered how a disabled person lives their life? Join our host, Lois Drachen, as she chats to people about work, education, travel, sport, the arts, and leisure, and the tools and techniques they use to live their lives with the disability. And now, on with the show.
Hi, it's Lois. I am super excited to tell you that Fiji's memoir, Pause for Thought, Seeing the World Through the Eyes of a Guide Dog, is now available as an audiobook, an ebook, and as a print book. To find out more about this heartwarming story, stay tuned after the interview. I'd like to thank Hindenburg Pro for their kind sponsorship of this podcast. Hindenburg.com. It's all about the story. Hi there, and welcome to today's episode of A Different Way of Seeing, a podcast where we talk all things disability. I'm your host, Lois Strachan, and today we are chatting with Katie Fortune, who, well, I could tell you what I know about her, but let me rather ask her to introduce herself to us. Katie, how are you doing?
So well, Lois. Thank you so much for having me today.
So great to have you, and thank you so much for being on A Different Way of Seeing. You know, I've been on your show and loved that experience. I love the energy that you show in your episodes, but there's far more to Katie Fortune than just your podcast. So let us actually dig a little bit into your story, your background, and a little bit more about who you are, and then we'll go on to the specific topics. So, who is Katie Fortune? Tell us a little bit of your story.
Lois, that is a loaded question, my friend.
Always.
Yes, right? Oh my goodness. Well, my name is Katie Fortune, and thank you again for having me today. I loved having you on my podcast. I'm sure we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I am an American. I grew up in a tiny little town of Wisconsin. And for anyone that doesn't know Wisconsin, it is very far north in the United States of America, which also means is it's really cold here in the winter. And when we're recording this, it is currently the beginning of our winter. And I was telling Lois before we started recording, it has been incredibly cold here. So I'm like, I had to get all my winter clothes back on. But I grew up in a really tiny town. It's actually a Norwegian town in Wisconsin. And I grew up and I struggled a lot. I'm just going to dive right in. Okay. So I struggled in school and I didn't know why. I ended up feeling dumb, stupid, and alone. And I hate those words. Don't get me wrong. I don't love them, but that is how I felt. And I am the oldest of two kids. It's me and my sister. And my mom didn't realize what was going on. She didn't know why. Like, I was struggling at home. I was doing good in school, doing air quotes, good in school. I was quiet, shy, didn't make a fuss, got good grades, but people did not know what was going on at home. They didn't realize that I was sitting at the kitchen table every night with my mom trying to read, trying to spell, crying at the kitchen table, fighting because I knew a word in one sentence and then I did not know a word in another sentence. And my mom, being an avid reader, has had no idea. She's like, what is going on? She honestly thought that I was being a little stinker. Let's be real. Like, she's like, you just didn't want to do it. Like, she couldn't figure it out. And I was struggling. I was literally falling through the cracks before everyone's eyes. And then when I was in fourth grade, And mind you, my mom talked to teachers. She asked administration. She did everything she was supposed to do. But everyone said, Katie's doing good. She's a good student. She has to work a little harder, but she's doing fine. Well, in fourth grade, my sister, so I was in fourth grade, my sister was in first, and she was reading better than me. And I was 3 years older than her. And that right there, finally, my mom had someone to compare me to because I'm the oldest. I'm her first child. So she was like, okay, this is it. Like, no one's listening. And so thankfully, she works at a really great healthcare system, or at the time of this recording, she's retiring soon. So, but she worked at an amazing healthcare system and was able to get me in for testing. And to fast forward a little bit, we went in for the testing, and within 10 minutes, the doctor knew that I was dyslexic. 10 stinking minutes. That doctor knew that I had a learning disability, and I struggled with reading, writing, spelling, and comprehension. And so that started my journey on finding out that I am dyslexic and I learn differently.
That must have been quite a discovery for both you as a young child, but also for your parents.
Yes. So it was weird. It's crazy because I still to this day believe that is the best day of my life, finding out that I was dyslexic, because I knew then that I wasn't dumb, stupid, or alone. I knew I learned differently, and there was a reason why I was struggling. And a really like powerful thing that happened that day too wasn't just about me. That day, and my dad said this years and years later when we did a speaking thing together, my dad said the day that Katie found out she was dyslexic was the day I found out I was too. He had never known, and he was in his 40s. And his 10-year-old daughter was diagnosed, and my mom and him talked and said, oh my gosh, Chris, you're dyslexic too. And he had never been diagnosed before, but he'd struggle his whole life. He had to go to these different classrooms and feel stupid, like there was something wrong with him. But back then, in those days, they didn't really do diagnoses like they do now, and or did even back when I was getting diagnosed. So It was a really important day for me, but also it changed my life and my dad's life and my mom's life and everyone in our family. But it was a big day for both of us, for sure.
And was your school system willing to accommodate and adjust to your learning changes?
Yes, thankfully they were. And honestly, I don't think they'd get away with it if they weren't, because my mom is a fighter. So, no, awesome. they were. Yes, no, they were. And so my mom actually went back to some of the teachers that she had talked to and told them. And a few of them were like, oh my gosh, they would have never guessed that of me. But then they were like, it's clicking. It makes sense. But if Katie's dyslexic, oh my goodness, some other students are too. So it was like, it was literally like, and a big thing. So I actually, fun fact, we'll be talking about this later, but I'm writing a book. And in the middle of writing this book, I have been getting in contact with people that I'm talking about in the book, because I want to make sure that they are okay with me talking about them. And one of them was my third grade teacher. And I sat down with her and I talked to her. She was a huge influence in my life, still is to this day. And she said to me that the fact that she did not know and she couldn't figure me out all the way back in third grade still bothers her to this day. And
yeah,
that's really, it's just like, it's a lot to kind of think about. But I said to her, hey, if this didn't all happen the way it did, I wouldn't be writing this book. I wouldn't be able to help other people. So I'm glad that it did happen this way. And like, she said, the thing with you, Katie, was you, I could never crack you because you were doing good. Like, you literally, you masked so well And quite honestly, it's a better way to say it is I faked it so good that they couldn't tell. And so it's no one's fault, by the way. Like, I have no hard feelings on anyone. It was just, that's the way it was. And I did such a good job. And I've learned over the years, many people mask their disabilities, especially if they're invisible disabilities and they don't know what's going on. But women are really good at masking their disabilities, and girls, little girls are. And so that was a big eye opener for me now being in my 30s and learning more about myself and what I can do. And so, yeah, it was a really big day, and it was a really amazing time for me. Like, it changed my life so much just knowing that I learned differently. It was that simple.
Yeah, that's such a story, you know, in terms of the realities of living, and often it is more of the invisible disabilities that people don't see, acknowledge, recognize, diagnose. And I think, you know, your story really highlights the importance of, if you suspect, if you do live with symptoms, it's better to at least get them checked out. So tell me more about what impact the dyslexia has on your day-to-day life, and what accommodations you've now got in place that allow you to get through your life effectively.
Yeah. Well, I'll quickly just say some of the accommodations I had when I was a kid, because if there are parents and people listening to this and they're struggling, I would love for you to know that part, because that's important. Some of the accommodations that I had when I was growing up and I did use was extra time on tests. So I had time and a half on tests so I could take my time. I could have the test read to me so I could hear it, because I'm an audio learner. Mm-hmm. And then I took tests out of the classroom. So I went to a different classroom that I had a quiet space for myself, and I could sit down, focus. And whether it was me reading it aloud, because I actually just quietly read things to myself out loud, but it's not very loud. And if I needed something, like I didn't understand a question, I would obviously ask the special education teacher to read that to me or whatever, and she would. So normally, though, I would do it on my own, because the thing about my dyslexia is it's there. It's definitely there, but it's also not super severe. And so that's really hard. Not that I want it to be severe, but I have an instance, I'll share that later, but of a teacher not believing that I was dyslexic and didn't let me leave a classroom, and it's like to go take a test. And so that was really eye-opening too. So those are some of my accommodations. And then back when I was diagnosed, which would be 20 plus years ago, I also could have books on tape. So, and yes, tape, not on audio, like on recorded tape. And so for any of the young people out there, it's not on like a phone or anything. So I didn't use that as much as I probably should have, because it was super clunky and it was hard to do. And so I didn't really utilize that growing up. My mom and I would read, like, I'd read a chapter, she'd read a chapter, this and that and whatever. If I was now back in school, I would definitely listen to all of my textbooks on tape, because I've learned over the years that that is the actual only way that I can learn the best way for me is hearing it. So nowadays, fast forward. Oh, also in college, I did use all of those accommodations plus a note taker. So I actually had, through disability services, through the college I went to, they paid for a note taker in some of my harder classes. So I was an interior design student. We'll talk about that. But I didn't have a lot of tests, thank goodness. But we had art history classes, which I love art. But those are hard classes to memorize and remember and take notes on. And so I had a note taker there. And then I ended up studying with her too, which was super great. So I learned all those different things. I could have had other accommodations, but those were the things that were the most important for me to succeed in school. Nowadays, I don't have a ton of like specific accommodations that like a job would give me or anything. I just do it on my own. So I'm an audiobook listener, like through and through. I love books. I love reading, but I read through my ears. I listen. And so I love doing that. When it comes to like writing, because dear Lord, my spelling is not awesome. It is, Google's my best friend. There are times though that I will try to type a word out and not even know how to start the word. So right now my phone line of calling my mom, Mom, how do I spell this word? I like to even try to get it into Google. I'm like, can't get this word out. So I do that. I should try to use, like, you taught me more about this, but of like our audio text readers and things like that on computers. I think that'd be really helpful and beneficial for certain things for me. And then crazy enough, ChatGPT has been very, very helpful on certain things for me. And just, I'll type up something, I'll put it into ChatGPT for like an email, let's say for a customer or whatever. And then I put it in there and then it'll pop out all this great stuff. And I'm like, oh, that's beautiful. Like, and then I'll kind of reword it what I need in the way, because I still want my voice to come across. I still want it to be. But those are some of the things that I do now. I do a lot of voice recording when I have ideas. I'm a big note. This is kind of funny. If I didn't have my like my background blurred, you would see literally 100 post-it notes on my wall. Mm-hmm. That's how I'm like organizing what I need to do for each chapter of my book. Moving forward, I love visual things. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the things that I learned about myself that help me on a day-to-day basis.
That's fantastic. And, you know, I hear those accommodations and it's so interesting to think about the accommodations that are easily available to us nowadays that maybe 20, 30 years ago might not have been available. And audiobooks is one of them. They are so much easier to get hold of now. I mean, I can remember back when I was at university, I had to get my books particularly, specially recorded onto audio cassette because there just wasn't an audio library that I knew how to access. And there were services that would do that. We didn't have a disability service in our support service in our university. Those are a more recent adventure. And yeah, I'm dating myself now. But that in South Africa, at least, is a much more recent occurrence. They are now far more aware and far more used. But yeah, I mean, goodness, just knowing what is out there is really important. And I think that's one of the reasons I wanted to ask you about the accommodations. Because yes, if someone else is listening to this and they go, oh, her story resonates with me, maybe I should also be tested. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Okay. One of the things that you mentioned that I want to pick up on and go into a little more detail is your interior design. Let's talk a little bit about that. What particularly drew you to interior design as a career option?
That is a great question. And, it honestly, it's because of my dyslexia. And so when I learned in school, and no, I didn't start my career because I'm dyslexic and I only picked that. Okay. Like, it was out of learning about myself and what I loved to do. So I know I struggle with reading, writing, spelling, and comprehending different things sometimes when I'm reading. So I was like, at a young age, I started working with my dad in his welding shop. And he taught me how to weld at 10 years old. He says every 10-year-old little girl needs to learn how to weld. Yeah. Now, I will say publicly, my, at the time, 7-year-old niece beat me and started welding at 7. And she reminds me of that often. And so very proud of her. But I told her I learned at 10 and she looked at me and she walks in and says, "Grandpa, I want to learn how to weld tomorrow." And so she learned how to weld at 7 years old. But I learned how to weld. And then I learned because my dad is dyslexic, I kind of watched and learned from him. And he's a very, very crazy intelligent person when it comes to like engineering and building and working with your hands and visually seeing something before it's made. And I do that too. So I would do book talks in elementary, middle school, and I would build the thing. So like I loved the Boxcar Children books. I had to find a book that I wanted to read and that was the book, but I liked the Boxcar Children book. So I made a boxcar, literally built a boxcar that had a working door and the thing came up amazing. And with my dad, of course, with his help. And then I built a scarecrow out of steel instead of putting scarecrow stuff in, like, you know, your parents' old pants and you'd stuff all this, like, the straw and the hay and whatever in there. No. I built one with my dad out of steel, a little guy, and burnt my hands on it for the first time and learned really quickly, don't touch steel after it's welded. Even though my dad told me 350,000 times, I still did it because I was excited. And I built all these things. So going through high school and kind of thinking of different things, I did some of these like tests online back in the day. They probably still have them where they're like, fill this all out and it'll tell you what career you should be. And one of them was architect. And so I was like, interesting. Well, I loved The Sims. So The Sims was a game that we loved to play where you'd like create your virtual world and build homes and families and people. I didn't give two cares about the people. I wanted to build the buildings and design the homes and have the cheat code to have millions of dollars so I could build anything I wanted. And so I did that. And Legos, shout out to Lego, best brand around. I still love Legos at 35 years old. And oh my gosh. So all those things to me, like when I was going through school and whatever, I'm like, maybe like architecture, maybe interior design, which interior design is very different than decorating. Making that very clear here in the United States. I taught a bunch of students at the university I went to like a year or so ago. And I told them too, friends, we're not decorators. We're designers. We can design homes. People can build off our plans. We do a ton of great stuff. So I ended up deciding to go into the career of interior design, which is essentially interior architecture. And so when it's talking commercial buildings, we do everything on the inside of a commercial building, like big hospitals and all that stuff. Or if you're doing residential, you can do actual homes. Like I've had people build off my plans. I used to be a home designer, house designer. And so, yeah, I loved it. It was awesome. And now in my current day job, I am still kind of in the interior design field. I'm in outside sales and I design commercial spaces and sell the furniture inside the spaces. So it's the visual, it's being able to see it before it's built. I took my strengths and made it my career. Yeah.
Which is a very important thing to do. So tell us about the training that you went through to become an interior designer. You know, that sounds like it's a blend of the design work, the architecture, but internal, inside the buildings. So the layout, am I correct? The layout, the design of the spaces?
Yes. So yeah, I actually went
more about the training that you did.
Perfect. Yeah, I ended up, that's actually a great story. It's in my book about how I wanted to be an architect and go to this big school in Wisconsin and all this stuff. And my great aunt, Lynn, she wasn't going to have that. Like she asked me one day, like I'm in like, I don't know, I was in 11th grade or something before I was heading out. Like I was going to graduate in a year, right? So I need to make a decision. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go to blah, blah, blah school. I'm going to be an architect and all this stuff. And she said, oh, that's cute. No, you're not. I'm like, what? And she's like, no, you're not. You are not going to that school because they will treat you like a number. They have a terrible, like, they don't have a good disability services mm-hmm. area. Like, you need to go to a university. If you want to go to university, make sure you go to one that cares about you, that you're an actual human and not just a number. And so she gave me a couple options because it's cute that she thought it was a good idea to tell a 17-year-old what they're going to do. Like, that was just cute on her part. But, and I, you just can't tell me what to do. It's just, it's a thing. Like, I just cannot be told what to do. So anyways, of course, my parents were standing there and they were like, yeah, that's a great idea. We should go tour these other schools. And I was mad. Like, I was not happy. So went to one school, tested it. It was a terrible, it was the worst winter storm I've ever been through. So like, it made the whole experience terrible, which is fine. It wasn't the school for me. And then I ended up going and touring a school in Wisconsin called University of Wisconsin Stout. And it was like rainbows and butterflies and birds chirping in the way. It was beautiful. It was amazing. Long story short, I ended up going there. They are one of the best interior design schools in the Midwest, if not farther. It's my personal opinion, and not just mine. Like, it's actually tested and well known. But the schooling was actually more on the art side of things right away. You start out as like, it's like a polytechnic art and design school. And so, well, the school I was going to, they have many other things like construction and all this other stuff too, like in regular college stuff, like business and whatever. But I went to the School of Art and Design at UW Stout. And we had 4 years of different learning and all that good stuff. But we went through everything. We learned residential design, where you could, like, again, design the entire house from the ground up. People could build off your plans, do all that amazing stuff. You pick out all the finishes and you put where the windows are, the roof lines, all of that good stuff. And then also the commercial side of things, which is big commercial buildings. So again, we don't design the big commercial building in itself. That's architects and engineers. But we would do everything on the inside, whether the interior walls that are not load-bearing. This is going to go here. We're going to do an archway here. We're going to put flooring here. We're going to... Everything, when you walk into a building and you say, wow, this space is awesome. If it's done right, an interior designer's touched that. That's my opinion, because they do a really good job. Like, I didn't do a ton of commercial work because I wasn't really interested in that. I loved doing homes because I loved the people when I got to work with them. And it takes a special someone to work with couples that you have to, you know, be a therapist for and like make sure that they can get their home done correctly. And this person wants this and this doesn't want that. But you do, like, in residential, you do the kitchens, you do just everything you can think of inside of a home or a building, a designer touches. But we learned all of that. And here's the best part. And I'm going to say this for anyone that is going to go to college. College is amazing. If you want to go there and learn, and there's certain degrees that you actually have to go to college for, obviously doctors, we need them to be getting their stuff. But you're going to learn a lot in school, but you're going to learn a billion times more when you're in the field. So, like, just take that on and be okay with that. Cause I remember going out in the real world being like, I know nothing. I mean, like, you get out there, but you're there to keep learning. Every day you're here to keep learning about yourself, but also about your career and what you're going to do. So I was there for technically 5 years. I could have done it four and a half. I had a minor as well in sustainability, because sustainability is really important to me. And I traveled over to Europe and learned all about that when I was in college. And darn it, they do it better than we do. Still, we are so behind in the U.S., but we're getting there. So that's okay. So yeah, I loved it. It was amazing. And I ended up actually teaching there two years ago now, for an entire year. So it was pretty cool. I got to be a professor, or air quotes, adjunct professor kind of thing, lecturer for a few years, or for a few semesters, and I got to teach amazing students that wanted to be interior designers as well. But it's such a cool industry, and you can do so much with it, because I'm still in the industry, but now I'm in sales and I'm doing that side of things. So it's amazing, but it allows my brain to do what it does best.
Yeah.
And I'm not sitting here writing papers for, you know, a law office. Like, no, that would be the death of me. I would hate that. And so being able to do something that I know I'm really good at, but also can keep learning and growing in is really awesome.
Great. Yeah, I think, you know, the reality is that pretty much any career that you go into, what you learn at school gives you the foundational knowledge, but it's only when you get out into the field that you really gain the in-depth understanding of that theory, that even when you've done it as a practical process, you know, it really is going out there into the field, going out into the job and growing and learning as a result of it. I think a lot of careers are like that. I know teaching is, I think, yeah, a lot of careers do. Yes. So what, if any, challenges have you experienced as an interior designer in terms of your dyslexia?
Honestly, oh, that's a great question. I should have had this already prepared. Honestly, this isn't really, maybe it is a little about my dyslexia though. I loved being a designer when I was. And the thing I found that was really hard for me was to keep me sitting still. So sitting and looking at a computer all day designing wasn't fulfilling me. So that was something that was really difficult for me. I don't know if that's specifically towards the dyslexia or the achiever in me, probably both.
Yeah.
But I honestly, the best part about it being an interior designer for me was that I could be fully and completely me. And it was interesting. I honestly don't have an answer for that other than like me being open and honest and vulnerable about being dyslexic and about my disability, or as I call it, my different ability, would be most of my bosses I've ever had. This is crazy, but it's true. We're also dyslexic. And we found that out because we talked about it, which is so cool. And like, I connected with them on it, and it kind of makes sense though, because they're also in the construction industry and like we all work with our hands and do things. But I think the one thing that challenged me the most was just being able to sit there and work all day behind a computer. That's just not who I am as a human being. And that's why I got into sales. But even in the sales role, you know, I've learned over the years that I am a dreamer. I have a lot of big goals and dreams, and entrepreneurship is the biggest. And I find that many successful entrepreneurs are dyslexic. And so I've done a ton of research on that. And one of my favorite podcast hosts, she's the reason why, literally one of the biggest reasons why I actually decided to pull the trigger and write a book. Because she on her podcast said, this is Mel Robbins, I'm plugging her, she's amazing, Mel Robbins podcast, she said she was dyslexic. And when she said that, it hit me like, wait a minute, if Mel Robbins can write all these like New York Times bestseller books and read the audio, why can't I? Mm-hmm. And so like, that was a huge thing. And I'm not even answering your question, but it kind of like dove into that. I'm sorry. I don't find a ton, thankfully, that I struggle with in the interior design profession, other than like simple email type stuff, or sometimes I'll read someone's email and think they said something different, but I have to go back and reread it because I had it wrong. I literally read it completely wrong. Other than that, it's super hands-on and very design, like I can shut my eyes and see something and design it, and it's very design focused, which obviously is so helpful for me. So that's why I have succeeded so long in this. But also just knowing me and anyone that does, or if you're new to me, you'll learn quickly. I like moving and changing. And so I'm pretty excited about what's next on Katie Fortune Plate over here. So yeah. Yeah.
Well, talking about which, let's start talking about a few of the things that you've mentioned that are related to who you are and what you're doing currently. So there's two that I really want to chat about. And the first of them is your book. So what can you tell us about it? You know, what is the book? And what can you share with us?
Share everything with you.
I'm so excited. I know.
I'm not going to, because you got to read it. You got to read it. Yeah. You know? But I am just really excited and proud because it's something I've wanted to do for a really long time. And it makes me choked up over here. So I'm going to try not to cry, but I'm already doing it. But I wanted to do it for a very long time. And I kept talking myself out of it. I would say things like, Katie, are you crazy? You're dyslexic. Why do you think you can write a book? Would ever read your book? You sound like you're a seventh grader writing a book. This is ridiculous. You don't like even reading. Why write a book? Who do you think you are? You're going to fail. Those are things that continually go on in my head that I have to squash every single day. So the fact that I literally, as we're recording this, am done with the rough draft, the manuscript, I am now going into professional editing where they're going to tear it apart and then we're going to rework it and do all the good stuff. But I'm at that phase. It is surreal. For like, I think back to that little 10-year-old Katie and thinking that she, even before I was diagnosed, hated reading, hated writing, hated spelling. By the way, I don't like any of those things still, P.S. But being able to do something, I've written 43,000 words. That's insanity to me. Like, what? And no, I didn't use ChatGPT once other than for the title of the book. That is it. So I needed ideas. And I'm just really proud. And I'm really excited for it because it's a whole, like, I don't know, whole basket, whole book, literally, of stories about different things I struggled with, like how I got through this situation. And some of them are going to be hard to read because I would think, especially if you struggle with the same things that I do, and you'll learn in that. I cried through many of the first chapters just because it was all my younger years and all my struggles. But I promise you, there's a lot of good, funny stories in there too. So I have all different types of stories, but it's all kind of based around learning about who you are, just the way you are, advocating for yourself, which is so important to me. Advocacy and learning how to stand up for yourself and be who you are is just awesome. And I will tease it here that I am not the only one that wrote part of this, or this book. I wrote most of it, but I asked my mom to write two chapters. And so she has her perspective in this book because I'm not going to have kids. I've known that my whole life. My husband and I, we don't want kids. We love them, but we like them when they get to go back home to their parents. So we don't want kids. So I'll never be able to talk about that perspective as a parent. And I don't ever want to talk for my mom. So I wanted her to be able to talk about it vulnerably and open. And so she did. And it's super exciting. I am also terrified for people to listen to and read all of my like inner thoughts and feelings, but I know it'll help people. So that's where I'm at right now with the book.
You know, one of the reasons that I think it's really important to share our stories as people who are living a little bit differently is that often we're not exposed to those stories when we grow up. These are the stories that we probably wish we had been able to access when we were younger. Mm-hmm. That your parents probably wished that they could discover when they first received your diagnosis, because it's sometimes difficult to know what is out there. And to only have that perspective given by people who are not living the same experience is just not the same. Yeah. It doesn't give the same, you know, the same emotional response as being able to read a book and say, here's Katie. Katie has lived this, and look at what she has achieved. Yeah. I can do that too. And that's why I think it's really important for people like us to share our stories. And I think it's really awesome that you're doing it.
Thank you.
So I don't want you to commit, because I know that the publishing process is like very changeable. And I also know that things change. But do you have a title for us yet?
I do. And I'm not letting that change. So so we're good. We're good. I do. And I would love to share that. And yeah, I haven't, as we're recording this again, we're recording this in 2024, hashtag. But I have not shared this with anyone. So when this comes out, I'm sure like people will already know about this. But the main title, so books, if anyone doesn't know, have your main like title, and then you have a subtitle. So my main title is Embracing Your Different Ability. And then the subtitle is Together We Advocate Disability Stories Through the Eyes of a Child and Parent.
Love it.
And Different Ability is one of my brands that I have trademarked. So that is a big, big, huge reason. And that's part of my podcast too, why I have that on the book. It's just because it's really important. And I don't know if you want to know about any of this, but I don't call it my disability. I call it my different ability, because it gives me back that power and it gets, makes me proud. Not that disability is a bad word, but just as when I said it one time when I was feisty with my mom, and I'm like, it's not my disability, it's my different ability. It like put power into me. Like, because unfortunately, and that's why we're trying to change this. Like Lois and I, we're changing the world, right? Of that, I don't want disability to be a negative thing. And I want to keep talking about my disability, but I also want to empower a child if they found out they had a disability and maybe they got teased, because I did. And I talk about that in the book. And if I had that word, the words different ability, I could be like, it's not my disability, it's my different ability. And I'm awesome. You know, like I want that more of a positive and powerful thing to be able to be excited about it and share about it, because every single person in the world has a different ability, whether it is something with a disability or it's something something else different. And so again, different ability is not to take away the word disability. No, it is something else to empower us to be proud of who we are and to be proud to be different.
And I have, I mean, I don't think there is a right term. And, you know, I respect the decision that each individual makes for them to use a term that works best for them. And I think that is what is most important here. So, yeah, moving from your book, and let's talk a little bit about your podcast, because I still think you're one of the most energetic podcast hosts of any of the people that I listen to. And it's so lovely to listen to you and to hear your energy. It gives me a real boost. So tell us about the podcast.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Well, the podcast is called The Different Ability Podcast. And it's a place where at the beginning, I started sharing like some of my story. And that's where it kind of started. And honestly, it started during COVID. Like a lot of things during COVID, but I found myself being stuck at home, couldn't go anywhere. And that's very not normal for me. And so I was like, well, I wanted to do this, so I might as well go and do it. And then I opened it up and started interviewing incredible guests, like someone you're listening to right now, Lois, you were on my podcast and your episode, I'm just going to share it here now because then people can go listen to it, is episode, I'm going to go look it up real quick. 194
Gosh.
Is Lois's episode. And it is going out soon, again, as we're recording this, but it'll already be out when you're listening to this. So go listen to your episode. Is so awesome. Like, I edit all of them as of right now. And it just made me smile the entire time editing your podcast. And so your episode, I just loved it. But I want it to be a place for people to come and share their stories, whatever that may be, whether it's like Lois, and you talk about your journey of you becoming blind and what you've been doing and what the amazing things you're creating. Or if it's someone, honestly, this just, I'm reading their book right now. So one of my guests talks about her parents. She grew up with two parents that were blind. And that is an amazing story in itself too. And then I have people that have ADHD. Then I have people that have lupus and they're in a wheelchair. You know, like so many amazing different stories. And I also had a person on just recently. Her name is Katie as well. And she talks about helping educate people, not just children, everyone, about boundaries and things about their sexuality and saying no, and it's okay. And like reporting things, because that's such a issue in the disability community, which is heartbreaking. So like there's so many amazing guests and things that are on there. And I just love having a place for people to come and share their stories, but also to talk about what they're doing, because I never want one of my episodes for someone to come on, share their story. Everyone love them, which they do. And they're like, but I don't know how to contact them. I want to buy their book, or I want you to promote everything about yourself on there because I want people to be able to connect with you. I'm a relationship based person. I love building relationships. That is my job as a day job right now in sales. But like, I want people to be able to say, oh my gosh, I loved this person. I need to follow their journey because it's like mine and they help me now. You know, like, oh, that makes me so happy. So that's the gist of it. And there's going to be a lot more with it. I am actually, this is new news. No one knows this either. God, you're getting all the good stuff this today. So I am actually going to have a specific season that I'm going to put out on the Different Ability podcast that I am recording episodes specifically talking about each chapter of my book. And so going deeper, answering questions, I'm actually going to have my mom on many of those podcast episodes. So that will be coming soon. And maybe when you're listening to this, it's already out there. I don't know exactly, but stay tuned for that. But I just want people to be able to connect. I truly believe stories change lives. And like you said before, if someone could read that book or listen to that podcast episode and say, wow, that person's story is like mine, me too, they don't feel alone anymore. And they feel like they can do it and they can look up to them. Just like I look up to Mel Robbins for writing books and reading her audio and being her amazing self that she is. Like that inspired me to do it. Like, yeah, that's amazing.
Talking about sharing information, being able to contact people, where can people who would like to know more, where can they reach out to Casey Fortune?
Okay, I did not line that up that way. I did not mean to do that.
Well, that's what a good podcaster can do. A good interviewer should
do
that.
You're a great podcaster. You are.
Go with the flow of the conversation.
You're hilarious. I just was like, I did not mean to say that. I'm just so excited that your podcast episode is literally going out next week. And I like teared up editing the whole thing. So I just, sorry. I was just like, I want everyone to know about you. But thank you for being a great podcast interviewer. And saying that, so the easiest place to learn more about what I'm up to and all that stuff is my website, which is katiefortune.com. And so I spell my name a little differently because I'm different and awesome. And so thanks, mom and dad. But It's K-A-T-E-Y and then F-O-R-T-U-N, no E. So I, everyone's always like, hey, Katie Fortune. Nope. There's no E there. So katiefortune.com. If you like social media, I'm Katie Fortune everywhere. You can find me literally on the platforms that I'm on through there, but you can, the website shows you everything and you can connect with me there too. If you have questions or you want to be a guest or you want something, you want me to talk about something on the podcast, I am so open and excited to share more things with people. And then the book stuff will be there as well. I do have a website specifically for the book, but it'll be linked in my Katie Fortune website. So it should be good.
And where can people find the podcast?
You can also find that on katiefortune.com. There's a podcast page there. And then otherwise, if you love whatever platform you like to listen on, it's the Different Ability Podcast. So it's, that's the name of it. And you can find it all those places. So yeah, thank you for asking.
Well, it's, I like you. I like giving people the option of knowing how to reach out. And because my hope is that in listening to my show, that people will be able to resonate and want to learn more. So, you know, that's important to me as well.
Well, you're a great interviewer. So I don't know why anyone would want to hang out with you. So, and we're having you back on because you're writing a new book, or your book is going out. I'm just throwing it out there. So sorry if you didn't want to talk about it, but I do want you back on to promote your book. So.
Okay. We will definitely chat offline. But
cool.
As a final question, what advice would you give to someone who's receiving a new diagnosis of dyslexia?
It's a great question. I have a few. My first thing is take a deep breath. If you're the child, I want you to know you're not alone. And this is great news. Okay. Like now you have a diagnosis, you know, you learn differently and now you get to learn more about yourself. May not feel great right away, but I want you to know that this can be good things. Okay. People that are dyslexic are incredibly intelligent. We just do things really cool. Okay. So we do it differently than everyone else. And that makes us the best that we are, right? If you're a parent, it's going to be scary. I know I'm not a parent, but I can say this because I read my mom's chapter. Okay. So this is from Lynn. Take a deep breath. This is not the end all. This is a chance now that you get to also learn about how your child learns and you get to empower them to learn about themselves and to be the best version that they can be. And so learning to advocate early is super important. And that is something I'm so passionate about. That's why I wrote the book, because I would not be where I am today if I didn't learn to advocate early. And I learned to advocate early by watching my mom do it for me. So be there, be positive. My mom never talked negatively about my dyslexia or disability. She was like, wow, you learn differently. Let's learn about this. And it did help that my dad also is, but also hashtag, just so everyone knows, fun fact, dyslexia is very hereditary. So start looking into the family. Okay. So it's very, very, very hereditary. When I got diagnosed, many of my cousins got diagnosed. My uncles are like, it's very hereditary. So look into that and maybe you can help some other people as well. But the biggest thing is to learn about yourself and learn how you learn the best. And it's going to be different for everyone. Yeah. So just because I said some things today that may not resonate with you, but hopefully something did that you can kind of go and learn more about who you are and, man, advocate for yourself and people around you. And that'll change your life.
Awesome. Katie Fortune, thank you so much for joining us today on A Different Way of Seeing. It's been magical to get spend a bit of time with you to learn about you, about your work, and a little bit about the the book and the podcast. We really appreciate the time. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Have you ever wondered how your dog might see the human world? Have you thought about what they might think of air travel, train travel, the fact that we so often cook our food, but seldom theirs, or the amount of clothing that we seem to wear while they have only a single collar? Have you ever asked yourself how a guide dog is reared or trained to enable them to become the remarkable creatures that we admire so much? In Pause for Thought, Seeing the World Through the Eyes of a Guide Dog, you will find the answers to these and countless other questions. Pause for Thought is an heartwarming and engaging story in which you will meet Fiji, my beloved guide dog. She shares our adventures, stories about the life she lives, and how she sees the human world. Pause for Thought is now available on Audible and Amazon as an audiobook. It's available in the Kindle store on ebook, and it's available in print on Amazon for international readers and through my website, loisstrachan.com, for those readers based in South Africa. If you are a dog lover, you need to read Pause for Thought, Seeing the World Through the Eyes of a Guide Dog. Links to how you can find the various formats of the book are available on my website, loisstrachan.com. Just hop on to the shop and you'll find links to all of those different formats. Whether you're looking for the story as an audiobook, an ebook, or a print book, Pause for Thought, Seeing the World Through the Eyes of a Guide Dog is waiting for you.
Thank you for listening to A Different Way of Seeing. We'd love to connect with you. So find Lois at loisstrachan.com or Facebook, Lois Strachan Speaker. This podcast was edited by Craig Strachan using Hindenburg Pro. Hindenburg, it's all about the story. The credits are done at Naledi Media. Naledi Media, all your vocal needs under one roof. Read by Charlie Jassy. That's it for now. Thank you for joining us and see you next time when we bring you into the world of seeing differently.